Welcome to the Ninja Lane Podcast. In this episode, we talk about Computex 2013 and some of the great overclocking events that were there. And we give our first impressions on the new 700 series from NVIDIA. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McCain. Listeners of the Ninja Lane Podcast will know that we launch around the 10th or 24th of every month with our main show and the extras. This month, we're a little behind the schedule.
Yes, we are. Why are we behind schedule?
Well, there was a big trade show in Taipei, Taiwan called Computex, and it just happened to be during the time that we normally record.
Now, we've podcasted about Computex before, and it's been a pretty popular set of articles also on the Ninja Lane website. So my question is, how was the trip?
Well, the trip was really good, actually, and I have to qualify that by comparing how the trip was last year.
Right.
And see, last year I had like travel problems, and then when I get into Taipei, the hotel wasn't really all that great, and I think power went out for half a day, so I couldn't get online.
Now hold on, because I've been following your trip and reading your articles, so I know that this trip involved searches for Pepsi and earthquakes.
Yes, there was an earthquake every day. Which isn't uncommon in the,
The Ring of Fire, I think, is what you're thinking of.
Yes, that's the one. Basically, there's a bunch of tectonic plates that are always moving. And in Taipei, well, Taiwan in general, this last trip, there was a 3.0 earthquake every day. Some of them had two. And you can kind of feel them when you're walking around. You feel a little dizzy every once in a while. It's just a little bit of movement here and there. But this time, there was two of them that were six and above. The first one, I was in the basement of Taipei 101, which in an earthquake, that's probably the safest place you could possibly be in the entire country. You know, it's designed for earthquakes, has a big dampener up at the top. And basically, when you're up there and an earthquake happens, you're going to move a little bit, but it's going to be so slow that you're not going to notice.
Interesting.
Now, the second one, I was actually getting ready to go to bed.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, things started moving back and forth sideways. I'm like, oh. Yeah, another earthquake, and I was just kind of listening because normally they're kind of loud, you know, because the buildings will kind of, they won't necessarily touch each other, but things will bang around, and nothing happened. It was like dead quiet.
Interesting.
It's really kind of weird.
So everybody over there is pretty used to it? No widespread panic or?
No, actually, these things happen all the time. It's kind of like in California where you have little tremors every once in a while. The interesting one was, it was like a 3.0, but we were in the Gigabyte headquarters at one of the overclocking events after the show. It's like the seventh floor, and there was just a 3.0, but that building was short enough that it started swaying a lot.
Oh, wow.
So it felt like a 5. It's just because that building was designed to move, and it was at the right height that the earthquake just amplified how much it was.
That sounds pretty crazy. Now, I know folks are waiting for us to talk about tech, but since I mentioned the Pepsi shortage, we should maybe talk about that a little bit.
Oh, yes. Well, in the past, I blog about this every once in a while. One of my famous ones was what to do in a land with no Pepsi. You could see Pepsi signs everywhere, but you couldn't go to a convenience store to buy a bottle or a can. Well, I found that there was this convenience store called Family Mart, and they would always have like a single line of Pepsi, you know, in little 20-ounce bottles. This time, I went to Family Mart to pick up my morning supply, and nobody had them, and I was a little upset. Later that day, I went to Jason's, which is like kind of the, I would say like the Safeway of Taiwan or Taipei. You know, they have Costco there too, but Jason's is like one of the larger supermarkets.
Right.
And they had a shelf with some Pepsi on it, just regular Pepsi. You know, you couldn't get Diet Pepsi or Pepsi Max or anything like that.
So you're saved.
So I was saved, yeah. So I went and picked up like 8 bottles, I guess, put them in a big paper sack and brought them back to the hotel and put them in the fridge. And those lasted for the majority of the trip. Although, ironically, at the Gigabyte headquarters during that earthquake, well, the earthquake happened after the event, but they had ordered pizza from Domino's of all places. Domino's is a Pepsi affiliate.
Right.
What was it? He got like a 1.25 liter bottle for every Pepsi or every pizza that you ordered. So they had 2 bags of these big Pepsis along with all the pizzas. I was the only one that drank any of it.
Ha! Nice.
And when I left, you know, I took 2 bottles with me. They say, yeah, take as much as you want. And I was like, well, all I could carry was 2 bottles. A couple days later, somebody took a picture of the fridge that they have in the overclocking lab at Gigabyte. And I guess there was like 6 bottles of it still in there. Nobody had touched it.
Oh, no. No wonder it's so hard to find. But anyway, let's talk about some of the stuff you saw on the trip. Now, for folks that haven't had a chance to check it out yet, you really should go to ninjalane.com and check out Dennis's coverage from the event, especially the pictures, which is generally, for me, the highlight of the show.
Yeah. Well, and people like seeing the pictures. And admittedly, it's like, you know, you go to the show all day, and then you have like an after party to go to, some events, you know, media events to get, you know, the hobnobbing with the schnobs, if you will.
Right, right.
And when I get back to the hotel, it's usually too late for me to start writing. I just want to crash. So jet lag will get me up around 4 or 5 in the morning, mm-hmm. and then I'll sit down for 3 or 4 hours and write out that day's article.
Oh, no wonder you need the Pepsi, right?
Yeah, you got to get up. Definitely, there's a lot of pictures, and there's probably 3 times that amount that I didn't get posted because either I ran out of time or there wasn't much to talk about or they just weren't relevant.
Now, when you were headed out, I know I said, save some good stuff for us to talk about. So you could share something that hasn't already been posted on the Ninja Lane website.
Yeah. Well, we have 2 major releases happened during Computex. Well, 3, I guess. There was the Haswell X87 motherboards.
Mm-hmm. Very big.
Very big. We also have the GTX 700 series graphics cards, primarily the 770s.
Yeah. Big also, but maybe not as big as we thought it would be. Yeah. We'll talk more about that.
Yeah. And then we also have the AMD Richland line. But, you know, I'm going to say that was very mute over the entire course of the show.
Yeah, I didn't see much about that, which was interesting.
The way that the show has kind of worked in the past is that the first day of the show was always the announcements. That's when things would launch.
Mm-hmm.
The worldwide marketing says, well, we need to have it launched before the show so people are familiar with it and know what to look for.
Right.
And really kind of takes the thunder away from a big unveil at the show. So a lot of companies were getting really creative with the way they launched their products. For instance, MSI announced the new MSI, MSI.MSI or something like that. In the past, MSI has had their Lightning series graphics cards, and then they would have Hawk series graphics cards. And then they just have kind of the reference designs. Now they've aligned those graphics cards with their motherboard market. So they have an OC line. So that's the Lightning Edition cards and then also the M and X Power motherboards. They have a gaming line, which is the previous Hawk Edition cards.
Okay.
Kind of not the Lightning, but not reference. So they're mm-hmm. still custom.
But they're not called Hawk anymore?
They're not called Hawk. They're called gaming.
Oh, okay.
So you have like the GTX 770 gaming or the 760 gaming or 780 gaming. Well, I don't know if they have 780, but they should.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also have the gaming line of motherboards. Now, the hardware is different, but also the color schemes are different. So all the overclocking stuff is yellow, gaming stuff is red, and then the classic line is blue.
Oh, I think I've seen already some of the black and red packaging of the gaming line.
Yeah, we had a 650 Ti Boost that was gaming. Well, it had the gaming packaging on it and stuff, but nobody really knew what that meant yet. They just figured, well, it's a gaming card. So MSI had a press conference the first day to announce their new products, the way that they're aligned. And then they had Elmore, which is their in-house overclocker, talk about the MOA events and how overclocking is kind of perceived within the company and some of the new tools that they're releasing. They also had their chief gaming officer from Fantic. I believe that's how you pronounce the name. But that's their professional gaming team that they sponsor.
Oh, yeah. They're big. A lot of divisions.
Yeah. And they were talking about what it takes to be a member of the team, you know, being able to game for 8 hours a day and get their game time in, but how MSI is helping their game with gaming notebooks and video cards and motherboard.
Oh, it's nice to see a renewed focus on the hardcore gaming elements.
Yes, definitely. Some of the other companies also aligned very similar to MSI by having an OC segment and a gaming segment and then their classic segment. I'll just use the MSI names because everybody was different. One of those was ASRock. We all know ASRock as being the budget motherboard company that was kind of spun off from ASUS to compete right. with like ECS and some of those other companies. Well, mm-hmm. I guess they're kind of tired of being a second-rate company and they've started really spending a lot of R&D effort to make their boards competitive with everybody else in the market.
Well, it's interesting you say that because they've had some highly reviewed boards over the last couple of years, especially since Sandy Bridge. But it's generally perceived as sort of a surprise when one of their boards rates really well, but they're actually getting very feature rich.
They are, and part of that is because other companies have added more features to their motherboards. Nick Shih has worked with AceRock to add a conformal coating to their OC line.
Oh, what's that?
That's basically a waterproofing, kind of like when you're going to do extreme overclocking, people rub Vaseline on the motherboard.
Oh, right,
stuff like
right,
that.
Or the eraser, all those fun, nasty processes.
Yes. In this case, after the board goes through the QA process, it goes into a special machine and it puts plastic down to basically insulate all of the board components to get water in there. And during the overclocking demonstration, Splave and Nick were overclocking with liquid nitrogen with no insulation.
Wow, that is a big deal.
Yeah. One of the other companies that was there was Galaxy. Now, we know Galaxy because of the video cards that they've been making. In Asia Pacific region, they also have an overclocker line that is a custom PCB, kind of like the MSI Lightning, but it's not quite as tall, so the VRM isn't as big.
Okay.
But the special thing about this board, or card in the case, is the board. It's pure white.
Cool. Now, I think I saw you playing with the pictures of that, and it is difficult to describe because it really is just a bright white with the etchings into it, so it's kind of a black and white motif.
Mm-hmm. And with a little bit of gold in there because China loves gold.
And that same white theme is carried across onto the front also, not just the PCB, right?
It's correct. Yeah, it's the whole heatsink assembly. The 780 edition had copper heat pipes that were sticking out the very top, so it looked a lot like the VaporX from Sapphire.
Nice.
And they also had a motherboard that is going to be a China-only sort of thing. It was an overclocker board, had a very large PWM, supported multiple graphics cards.
Also in that same white motif?
No, it's actually a gray.
Interesting. I wonder how that stuff would look under a black light. That sounds just neat.
Yeah. Now, the white PCB reminds me of, what was it, Sapphire did the motherboard that was white?
Oh, those old school Dragon motherboards.
Yeah,
that brings back some pretty fond memories. We might have to try to hunt one of those down.
Yes, yes. And put it under the black light.
Yes, indeed.
Now, one other company that I met with was a suggestion from one of my contacts, actually, and it was called C-Vision.
I'm not familiar with that name.
Well, it's a startup out of China with some U.S. backing, and they are creating a parallax barrier that goes on televisions, monitors, tablets, phones, to give you glasses-free three dimensions.
Oh, no glasses 3D. Well, that's like the holy grail right now.
Yeah, you said it better than I did, that's for sure. So yes, they are creating this parallax barrier that will get applied to televisions, screens, and whatnot. And then they also supply some software that will take a 2D image and convert it to match their film.
Nice.
And give you a three-dimensional effect.
Very cool.
So that is a startup, and they have some interest in the industry, and you know, if you can sell it to Hollywood, basically they're going to sell the technology, and that's what's going to get it to take off. Because we saw LG had a television like that at CES a couple years ago,
right?
But you had to stand in a certain spot to get the three dimensions. With their film, you can be 120 degrees from the screen and still get a three-dimensional effect.
Well, that's not bad. That's kind of like the old school IPS monitors anyway. So one of the companies I get excited about and we work a lot with here at Ninja Lane is Gigabyte. I know you posted briefly on the site about them, but did you have any other exciting Gigabyte news?
Yes, the Gigabyte product lines are changing slightly. Now, they were also one of the first ones to silo their products. So they had the OC line, and then they had the gaming line, and then their classic stuff, if you will.
Well, you know, I'm really a big supporter of the gaming line because that's my motherboard of choice with the Sniper line.
Yeah, you have, what, the Sniper 3?
I do.
Well, now they have the Sniper 5.
What? Sniper 5?
Yeah, I don't know what happened to Sniper 4.
That's an interesting train of thought. One Sniper didn't make it, apparently. But yeah, Sniper 5. Wow. What chipset's that?
That's going to be the Z87.
Nice.
Now, the interesting thing is that we have the Z87 OC Force. We have the Sniper 5.
Right.
And then we have the UD7.
So really several boards in that high end.
Right. All in that high end. They all have a water-cooled PWM.
Nice.
With fans as a backup. The power supply on there is all the same size. They all support multiple graphics cards with the PLX chip. And aside from the color, they're pretty much the same. except the Sniper has the killer NIC and also the upgraded audio and stuff like that.
Yeah, so fully feature-rich as opposed to just a raw overclocking card.
Right. Now, on the OC line, we have the OC Force, which is the top-of-the-line board, nice. And then we also have the standard OC. Both of them are overclocking-friendly, but according to Gigabyte, the standard OC board, which sells for around $200, is the better of the two boards.
Well, that's interesting. Is that just because it's such a bare-bones card?
Partially, yes. It's the high-cookie edition, if you will. It's the board that was specially designed for setting records.
Wow, okay.
But these are not necessarily video card records because it doesn't support four-way SLI. You can put physically four cards on there, but it's going to be the AMD variety.
Okay.
It has a lot of touch controls on there for processor and memory overclocking, and that's really where it's going to excel. The PWM on it is a lot smaller. It's really reminiscent of the power supplies you see on like an ASUS board. So it's a lot smaller, so it's easier to insulate around. There's not a lot of components around the socket. So if you're using, you need a deracer like what I did over here on the Phase machine, it's really easy and really fast to do.
All that sounds good. Now, we talked earlier when we were talking about ASRock boards about different color schemes and a real recognizable theme. Is that true also in the Gigabyte boards?
Yes. The OC line is orange, which is kind of a throwback of the DFI era.
Right.
The gaming boards are green because it's still following the pseudo-military theme. And then the standard boards are still there, like blue, black, whatever. But they also have, like, the UD4 is a red, and then they have, like, a blue one, and then I think a gray one.
So interesting, but easily identifiable on the high end of the scheme, at least.
Mm-hmm. The important thing is that everything is siloed, so you have special built boards in every segment.
So you also were talking about other big manufacturers. The one that comes to mind is EVGA.
Yes, EVGA had another suite in the Hyatt. Since they're not one of the larger companies in Taiwan, they're, you know, US-based for the most part, they have a smaller display, and it's mostly for customers to come in and see stuff. They were showing the X79 Dark, which is their new board that they were showing at CES. Supposedly, it's a little behind schedule, but it should be out in the next month or so. They also had classified editions of their GTX 770 and 780.
Ooh, yeah, those have been traditionally the cards to watch.
Yes, and that is based off of some of the efforts of Tin and Kingpin, which are their in-house overclockers. When the GTX 680 came out, they stuck a EVGA Untouchables on there, which is an external VRM. Soldered that onto the board and basically disabled the onboard power supply, and were able to overclock it to like 2,000 megahertz.
Amazing. And I think the classifieds are already showing up on their website, so it's not that far out. Maybe by the time you're hearing this.
Definitely. And they also have classified and for the win Z87 boards, which are multi-graphic supported, and also they feature a new UEFI BIOS interface.
Something to look forward to. Now, I know it's not all business when you go to the show.
Oh, no. No, it never is.
And you posted some tantalizing articles about some of the other events you attended, and I thought maybe we ought to talk about those because the pictures, I think, don't really give you the full flavor of what goes on at some of these events.
No, the pictures were more of a kind of showing off sort of thing.
Right.
Well, HardwareBot, or HWBot, as the international name is supposed to be, was planning to get together all of the overclockers that were at Computex. Now, before the show, Corsair and Intel sponsored a Haswell overclocking event, which was kind of the real live version of the Pro OC Cup on HardwareBot. So they got together a lot of the famous overclockers. Then they gave them Haswell processors and memory and said, okay, here.
Go break some records, huh?
Exactly. Those overclockers were at the Computex, and they were also going to stay in Taiwan for a couple days after the show. Massman at HardwareBot was working with all the different manufacturers to set up an overclocking workshop at each one of the places so that these overclockers could get some time on their new products and give some feedback. So then the first one was at Gigabyte headquarters, which was just kind of an overclocking party.
Fun.
Yeah, so they had it over 2 days. Went on the first day, which was Saturday. And Computex was technically still going, but that's the open to the public day, and I never go. So instead, I went to Gigabyte headquarters and got to see Dinos hit 7 gigahertz with a 4770K.
And that is impressive, honestly.
Yeah, they couldn't quite get it validated because the processor wouldn't cooperate when you're trying to save the validation file.
Oh, no.
But I have a photo of the screen, and that is in that coverage.
Yeah, very cool.
Some of the other stuff that they were doing, HiCookie set up a four-way Titan machine.
Wow, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, it's about $5,000 worth of hardware there because it was using the OC-Force motherboard that we were talking about and four Titan cards in SLI, and they were just running Firestrike.
Now, I know there's a story about chasing Titans also.
Oh, yes. There was, before the show, HiCookie was modifying some of them for the overclocking events that were going to happen at G-Skill during the show.
Okay.
And he fried three Titan cards
modification
process. Because he was trying to add a board similar to like the EVGA Untouchables. It was the Gigabyte edition of it.
Right.
Trying to solder that onto the Titan card so he could get more power into the chip.
And we blew three of them. So how do you get three Titans on short notice?
You go to the computer market in Taipei and start walking around. So I was with my Gigabyte contacts, one local and one from the U.S., and we were walking around the show and looking at video cards, basically. We went had lunch, and then we went and were looking for video cards. And we found in there was a total of 3 Gigabyte branded Titan cards in the entire place.
Wow.
So at $1,000 a piece, that's kind of a big chunk of money dropped down, which was pretty cool because, you know, he just put down his credit card and said, well, I hope they reimburse me for this.
And I got to do what you got to do, right?
Yeah. And I have a picture of that, of them making that purchase on the Facebook page. So
very cool. Something to check out. If you haven't already checked out the Ninja Lane Facebook, we'd love to have you. It's a fun place to see additional news and some of the less formal releases from Ninja Lane. So I'd encourage you to go out there and give us a like.
Definitely. Thank you. And see, MSI had an overclocking event also on Monday following Computex. And it was more of a workshop. They wanted to get some of the overclockers in using their gear and then get some feedback on how did you like the menus and, you know, what would do you want us to improve and stuff like that.
So we talked a little bit over the last year about how the manufacturers seem to be turning away from an overclocking market. But a lot of what I'm hearing is sort of a reversal of that, that they're actually opening up. And really, this sounds like a good example of that. Is that kind of the impression that you got?
Yeah, that's the impression that I'm getting. Every company is a little bit different. Some of them are very closed behind the door mentality, and some of them are very open. MSI is one of those companies that I want to say they pioneered overclocking. I think they were pioneering this so much that they didn't get a lot of external feedback, and in some ways they were falling behind. So this is one way for them to improve their boards, improve their systems based off of feedback from people that have used other competing systems.
Oh, very cool. So how was the MSI overclocking?
It was kind of fun. They had it in their, they have a factory, well, office tower, if you will, in downtown Taipei. It's a closed campus. They got like security guards there, so you have to go in and check in.
Ooh, and then nice closed doors.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And it's always fun when you can get in because that way you just, they do take security pretty seriously. Yeah, it was one of the other buildings down in the basement. There was a bunch of conference rooms. They basically set up 4 systems in one room and 4 systems in another room. One of the engineers would bring down a door of liquid nitrogen when they needed it, and they just kind of had fun.
Very cool. But no 7 gigahertz clocks that one.
Sadly. No, no. The processors that they were given were well used, I should say.
Oh, it was still a good opportunity to get a hands-on with the MSI products.
Yeah, they did a 3-way over the Lightnings with 770s, which was kind of fun.
Nice.
Turns out that this is one of the major disappointments, too. You can't do 4-way with a GTX 770.
Oh, that's news, because I know that it's not officially supported, but in the past, a little driver love would get you there. Not true, huh?
Not true. It wouldn't happen. They were trying to set up 4-way. It was kind of funny because you get it set up and then they set up the bridges and they were asking me, so how do you set up the bridges? It's like, okay, do this. You lace them this way. All right, cool. They turned it on and it would only detect 3 cards.
No.
And in some cases, it would only detect two cards because they didn't lace them up right. So it's like we had to pull one out and then lace it up differently, and then they could run three-way, but that was about it.
So any other overclocking parties?
There was, ASUS had one at their factory, which was outside of town. Still in Taipei, but kind of outside of town. Now, ASUS was having this little overclocking workshop pretty much all weekend. The day that Gigabyte started, they also had one.
Okay.
They were in there basically trying to set records the entire time.
Oh.
So they had Titan cards with a little bit of Shimina Love, which is external VRMs, but he goes and cuts them off of existing video cards.
Okay.
So he'll take an ASUS card and chop the VRM off and then solder it on. And it looks really cool. I'll have to post a picture of it.
Yeah, definitely.
So in any event, during the event, all of these overclocking events, ASUS was there just trying to set records and really kind of one-up everybody.
Nice.
So they were benching four-way Titan at like 6.5 gigahertz.
Very nice.
And yeah, so it was really, really exciting. The last day, and this was the day that I flew home because my flight was in the very evening. Massman and groups, we all went out to ASUS. And we were actually expecting not to get in because, you know, I'm not real tight with ASUS. And neither is Massman because he's kind of like flamed them a couple times. So we were expecting to like, you know, get the big finger through the gate. But yeah, they ushered us in. We were in there for a while. And admittedly, I didn't spend a lot of time in the overclocking area. They have a Starbucks in their building. I'm not a coffee drinker, but there was other people in the group that were. So we would go up there and get some sandwiches and just kind of blabbing. It was kind of fun because it reminded me a lot of like the cafeteria at HP. Mm-hmm. You know, where it's just a whole bunch of shops and everybody's sitting there working and stuff. Well, at HP, when people are working, nobody's there. Well, at ASUS, they work wherever they sit down. So there's people on laptops, on phones, and, you know, just kind of socializing and working. It was really kind of cool.
Yeah, nice way to get the pulse of the whole kind of movement.
Downstairs in the overclocking room, they were still allowing the overclockers to use their gear. Freddie Yama was there trying to get a memory overclock on a system. Shimina was down there kind of making sure the systems would work, and they were pulling in LN2 tanks in and out of there. But you could definitely tell they were kind of tired of what they were doing because they weren't trying to set any records.
They've been doing it all week.
Yeah, so I really wish I would have been there earlier so I could have seen some of the fast stuff that they were doing, but I really think that you know, what I did at Gigabyte and MSI was probably a little bit more important and more relevant.
Well, an opportunity to meet a lot of different folks.
Yes.
So, trip highlights?
Trip highlights. I would say the MSI press release was good.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the new ASUS boards that came out were good. They have a nice little overclocking panel that comes with their boards where you can overclock from a, you know, it's like a little touch button thing.
Oh, nice cool. To see that kind of stuff coming back. I'll watch for that for sure.
Yeah. Noctua had some new heat sinks. And actually a working demo of their noise-canceling fan system, which was kind of cool.
Ooh.
Still in beta, but it's kind of like noise-canceling headphones. Well, noise-canceling fans.
Wow. Yeah, that's long overdue.
Yeah. G-Skill still had their 4 days of overclocking where they invited overclockers from like EVGA, Gigabyte, ASUS. They were all there doing a show at the G-Skill booth. And they had the G-School girls out there giving out stuff, and they were doing their little presentation. Some of the overclockers would, like Kingpin, for instance, he benched four-way Titan. The ASUS guys were actually there setting records, and they calculated their show, like, down to the letter, what they were going to do.
Nice.
Everybody else was just kind of, like, you know, winging it, getting out there. Gigabyte was out doing Titan and also some Haswell overclocking, which was kind of fun, so everybody had a different tact, different way of handling it. But in the end, it was just for to gather people and promote their stuff.
Sounds like a good trip. And I know the coverage is definitely worth a read. So check it out on ninjalane.com. And we'll be posting a few extra tidbits to go along with this podcast. So check it out.
So when I say, what is a gaming video card? What's the first thing that comes to mind?
Well, for me, I think of ATI because I have a 7970, which has been my go-to card up until very recently, as you know.
Now, does that card support a built-in physics engine?
Well, no.
Does it do like three-way with 3D surround vision stuff?
Well, not like you think it does, anyway.
No, I think it supports 3D, but a little bit different. But you do get iFinity, so you can plug in like 30 million monitors.
And iFinity was what I was thinking of. Not quite the same.
No. Well, for those of you that are trying to figure out what we're talking about the 700 series from NVIDIA.
That's right. The latest and greatest, can I say refresh from NVIDIA?
You can say refresh. I think that they would probably take offense to that, but it is a refresh. Now, the 700 series started with GTX Titan. Now, before you say, hey, what's going on? Titan is a one-off GPU that they created to kind of celebrate the processing engine that went into the Titan supercomputer.
So we've talked about Titan before in the podcast. It's not exactly the video card that you're going to rush out and buy because...
It's $1,000.
Holy cow.
Now, the 700 series started with the GTX 780, which is a $650 GPU.
Right.
That uses the same GK110 processor that's on GTX Titan.
So what does the extra $400 savings get you?
It gets you two less processing clusters.
Well, that doesn't sound so bad.
No. The PCB is the same. The cooler is the same. It has the same window and lighting effects, and also same GPU Boost 2.0 technology.
Heatsink system is one of the best I've seen, especially OEM.
Definitely. And it also has the light. Not many aftermarket companies do the light.
And I like lights.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I believe you were complaining about how card vendors didn't put anything across the top of the card.
Yeah, which is obscene, especially with windowed cases, so it's nice to see them coming around.
Yes. GTX 780 was the Titan little brother, so to speak. Now, the GTX 770 is basically a refresh of the 680 that was released last year.
And that's the Kepler architecture.
Yep, it's Kepler architecture, GK104, I believe is the code name.
Uh-huh, and that is made famous by last year's real top of the heap, the GTX 680.
Yes, exactly. Now, the 770 is a refresh of that, basically the exact same GPU with faster memory clock, higher core clock, and higher TDP and power usage, but also a lot more powerful.
But not as bad as the ATI cards, at least in the power usage.
No, not so much. Then the last card in the 700 series lineup, at least for the foreseeable future, is going to be the GTX 760.
Right.
Now, in the 600 series, you had the 680, the 670, and then the 660, 660 Ti. All those cards were kind of lumped together based on different GPUs. This time around, you have the 770, which is basically a 680, and then you have the 760, which is supposed to replace the 660 Ti.
Oh, so that's interesting. So they no 770 Ti?
Well,
it remains to be seen, I guess.
Well, probably not. They basically skipped over the 670, which was kind of the cut-down version of the 680.
Right.
We have one of the 670 cards from Gigabyte, and I got to see the PCB on it. It basically is the same PCB that was on the 670. So you got five power phases, the WinForce cooler with three fans, and a nice healthy overclock.
Yeah. The advantages over the 600 series don't seem like a lot on the surface, but it really does make a big difference, especially when you start looking at overclocking and high-end performance.
Yeah, partially because of the GPU Boost 2.0 technology. And in terms of overclocking, what did you get out of that card?
Looking at the performance of the 770, we really did get nearly every score higher than my 7970. It is really driving the price down. And I talk about this a little bit in the review, which you can see on ninjalane.com. But what really drives it home for me is the price point, the 770.
Oh, yeah. $400 is a great price for a card.
$400 has really seemed like an expensive card. But over the last couple of years, that's really turned into kind of the mainstream performance budget for most people. And as you know, when I look at building a PC, I'm really looking at price for performance. And it hasn't really been there for me in the 680 or the 780 or, oh gosh, not the Titan for sure.
Well, and you talk about price performance, and NVIDIA always talks about performance per watt, which is kind of a different way of looking at our cards are more efficient than your card.
Well, that's very true. And I think that we forget sometimes the cost of owning some of these higher-end cards over time. You know, it's not a common sales point.
No, It's not. And you really don't want to have to buy a 1200 watt power supply to run one or two of these cards in your system either.
No, and the scalability is something that we talk about a little bit in the reviews, and that is that you can purchase a card like a 760, for example, which is probably going to come out, you know, around $100 cheaper. And by the time this podcast comes out, those will probably be available on the market. But two of those cards, maybe three of those cards, puts you in that same performance range as last year's top dogs, a lot cheaper. And over time, you can buy one card, add a second one when the price drops, add a third one again when the price drops, and still stay current with what the top games are pumping out.
That is true. Or you can spend $650 and get yourself a 780, or even wait a couple of weeks, get yourself a 780 Classified from EVGA.
Ooh, yeah. Now, Classified is a different animal. So what makes a Classified so special?
Well, it's a custom PCB with a larger VRM. Comes with a new cooler. It's the EVGA ACX cooler. Better performance than the stock NVIDIA. Also quieter, because basically you got two fans moving a lot of air over a large heatsink.
So coming back to the market, we talked about the 770 really bringing it to the ATI cards, especially the 7970. But ATI's response to the 700 series?
Something around 8000 series, but you know, these days they're not really in the GPU market.
Well, I think that they've really shown in their reluctance to put out the dual GPU cards that used to be their top dogs in volume, that this is not a market that they're really pursuing as strongly as they used to.
Well, we had the Devil 13 we talked about on the previous podcast, and then I would say 10 months later, they're releasing the 7990s, which is the dual GPU.
Right.
Not really in big volume, but they finally released that design to be sold. Mm-hmm. And that was just in response to some of the higher performance NVIDIA cards and the fact that they don't have anything to answer to that yet.
So ATI has used that card to claim the fastest single card performance on the market with the Refresh and the Titan, which is, it's a different animal.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's the fastest GPU you can buy, and I don't think that it's probably going to be a different architecture next time around.
Is there, looking to the future, possibility of a dual 770, a 790?
That's a good question. We'll have to wait and see.
We've reviewed the 770, and I like it, and I have to say that it is probably going to be a replacement for my ATI card, which has been my go-to card for a couple of years now.
Yeah, you'll finally be able to see the flags waving in Borderlands.
Oh, no. PhysX is finally finding a home legitimately in my PC. And we're also looking at some 760s right now in the lab, and those should go live about the time this podcast does as well. Performance per price point on those, you've got to take a look. So something to look forward to.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes. If you have questions, drop by the forums or email us at podcast@ninjalane.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Ninja Lane by subscribing to our RSS, now available on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter or join us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2013. Thanks for listening. Now you do.